Blog Talk Radio.
Tapping into trillions. Stay with us, and in a few minutes, we'll tell you how and why. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build that machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you want to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the home page, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Blog Talk Radio website at that time. My name is Q. And joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Yosef, who, like me, is a member of Ubu. Peace, Brother Yosef. How are you doing this evening?
And peace to you, Sister Q. I'm doing quite well. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us this evening. To begin, Brother Yosef, will you please tell the family a little about yourself?
Yes, I will. Thank you for that invitation. I'm a retired automobile engineer and moved to the South back in 1995 and heard about Hulu about 5 years ago and got real excited about a black co-op where we could build our own industries, our own businesses. But as a result, joined the group and been really satisfied with the progress that has been made. We've had a few missteps, but who hasn't? And looking forward to our taking another step with a new project called Fauna Properties.
Okay, thank you. Backtrack a minute. Automobile engineer, you design cars? That's what comes to mind.
Well, no, I was. That's a different part of the industry. My forte was putting the cars together. I was an industrial engineer in the manufacturing plants where we had to assemble the thousands of parts that eventually became a vehicle you could actually drive safely.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Okay, so tonight's conversation is tapping into trillions. One of the things that you we were planning for you to talk about is the vast wealth gap between white folks and black folks. And so for the purpose of tonight's conversation, will you define what you're talking about when you say wealth?
Well, when we talk about wealth, generally in America, the foundation of most wealth in this country today is real estate. And that means a home or land. And usually that has been the number one priority when people, of course, have an opportunity to and the funds to come up with a down payment, they want to buy a home because that's the beginning of building wealth in this country.
Okay, thank you. So what would you say is the most important factor responsible for the gap, the big gap between white wealth and black wealth?
Sister Q, that's a big question, and it has many different facets we have to consider if we're going to understand why this exists. Number one, white people own and manage most of the major businesses in America. This means because of their proclivity, they're going to hire their own people first and hire us if they just have to or they're forced to. We've all heard last hired, first fired. And so this is racism that shows up in the workplace, and this means that most black businesses, unfortunately, are usually sole proprietor operations. It's a one-man business or one-woman business, and they're seldom large enough and robust enough to hire our people. And so we need strategies that will create and build black businesses. And these black businesses would then allow our people to look to us as black business owners to offer job opportunities for our own people, and they wouldn't have to worry about being the last hired, first fired. We can turn that around, first hired, last fired.
Right. Okay. That makes good sense to me. Also, too, it's kind of like, we can't really be, it doesn't really make sense for us to depend on someone else to hire us if we can do anything at all to hire us, you know, create our own businesses and hire ourselves.
Yeah.
So I think that, go ahead.
That's right.
I didn't
and
even,
that's why I was attracted. I'm sorry, go ahead, Sister Q.
No, I was stepping on what you were saying. So you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that that's what attracted me to us lifting up. as a black co-op, we have now an opportunity to pool our resources, even if we just have a little money. If we collectively come together and pool our resources, we can create our own businesses that address fundamental problems of creating our own businesses that can employ our own people. But we'll get into more on that later. I wanted to also mention a second big issue or facet of this problem that creates this gap that exists between white wealth and black wealth. And number two is behavior. We as a people typically lack the discipline to save money. Some of this behavior, of course, is due to not having a steady income, you know, living from week to week, just surviving. And in that state of mind, it's difficult to set aside money from whatever you earn and set that money aside for investment. And investment is something we have to keep in the forefront of our mind, that we cannot work forever, no matter how young or strong we are today. Eventually, we get older and we're no longer able to work. At that point, we need to have money working for us. And that's why the investment is so important and so key to us. But it's a state of mind that's difficult for us to sustain when we, and many of us, are just struggling to live from week to week. Could I share you a little story that kind of illustrates what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
There's a little thin volume. It's a book called The Richest Man in Babylon. And I'll summarize it with just a few key points. A young man approached the richest man in Babylon and wanted to know the secret of his becoming wealthy. He was the richest man in Babylon. And the richest man in Babylon told him the formula is really very simple. Whatever you earn, you set aside 10% of it, and you live on the 90%. Whatever you want to buy or spend or have fun with, the 90%, that's okay. He said, but the 10% we have to set aside and do not touch it. Allow it to grow. And when you have enough money, you take that 10% and you invest it in something that's going to grow in value, like real estate or gold or jewels or other precious metals, and something tangible that's going to increase in value. And he said he did that all his life, and he was a shepherd boy when he first came to Babylon. And so this young man took that advice to heart and went out and emulated his example. And it wasn't long before he was also a very wealthy man. And as he grew older and was unable to work, he had reached the same plateau as the richest man in Babylon. And as a result, he had those assets, those investments supporting him. And the money was being made for him, even though he had stopped working. So this is a state of mind that we need to try to implement in our thinking. In other words, we need to really work at developing a state of mind where we have to set aside some of whatever we earn for future investments for ourselves and for our families and for our children and grandchildren.
Absolutely. And the name of that book is The Richest Man in Babylon, and
yes, ma'am.
I think free PDFs are available of that book online if anybody listening is interested to read the book.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know.
Yeah. So in your opinion, Brother Yusuf, what role does education have within this wealth gap?
Well, that's really surprising, because many of us think that education is holding us back economically. But the truth is, African Americans with four-year college degrees have a lower home ownership rate than white Americans without a high school diploma. Home ownership rates increase as educational attainment increases for both black and white Americans, but white high school dropouts have a home ownership rate of 60% compared to only 56% for black college graduates. Now, some of that problem is the student loan debt that most of our black brothers and sisters have as a result of getting through college. And in many cases, of all the racial groups, African Americans, believe it or not, have more student loan debt, and African Americans with a college degree are five times more likely to default on their student debt than white Americans. These inequalities in shouldering of student debt burden may therefore also be contributing to this widening home ownership gap because it affects their credit rating. And if you don't have a solid credit rating, you can't get a traditional conventional loan to buy a home, even though you got a good job and making good money. See? So there's so this is one of the things that trap our people into having a lower rate of home ownership.
So would you say that this is a planned kind of thing, that, you know, getting people caught up in the student loans, which then makes it that they can't save any money, then they default on the student loans, which breaks down their credit score and then makes it difficult for them to have the credit necessary to buy a home. You think all of that part of the agenda?
Exactly. Yes, I do think it's planned. I believe we're the objects of what's called social engineering. In other words, white people in positions of power manipulate things to keep us in a disadvantaged position. I'm going to give you an example. The law. We have very little to do with structuring the law. Most of our people are not aware that study our behavior and structure their laws to either criminalize our behavior or they economically take advantage of our behavior. For example, criminalization. The black codes, for example. When our ancestors were freed from slavery according to the Emancipation Proclamation, and our people were let go like stray dogs into the street, the white power structure began to create black codes. For example, loitering and vagrancy, which simply meant a person who was unemployed and homeless. Well, they passed these black codes that made those crimes. And so our brothers and sisters were arrested because they were unemployed and homeless. And then they were arrested and given a fine, say $50, and unable to pay the fine. So then they were sold off as chattel slaves right back to the plantation owners to work off their fine. It's an example of what they do, you see, to keep us in this situation. Right. A modern example today, just one other thing I want to mention, a modern example of this very same thing is when our elders transition and leave their farm or their home to several heirs instead of one, it creates a problem. What usually happens is you've got several heirs to one home or one piece of property. And we cannot come together and come to an agreement on how to manage and care for that home. The home falls into disrepair. No one wants to pay the taxes. The county winds up taking the property and auctioning it off. It winds up in the hands of white people. They come in and fix up the house, and they rent it right back to us.
Uh-huh.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is what they do to structure the law to put us in a position of disadvantage. And what we're trying to do with our this new business is to try to address some of these issues.
That's very important, I think. And it's good that you're breaking it down like that, because a lot of times people don't get the connection between how laws are passed and how the financial world controls what laws get passed, so that you know, behavior. The occurrence that I think of when you say like the gaps is how much time a person could get for crack cocaine, and how much time the same amount of powdered cocaine would get in the 90s. You know, when they did that. I forget what it was, but if you were black and more likely to have crack than powder, then your time would be. And who's to say that that's a crime? I mean, actually, as a sovereign being, you have the right to do what you want with your body as long as you don't hurt anybody else. Me buying a substance from you is private enterprise between the two of us. As long as both of us are happy, it should have nothing to do with, but we're not, you know, we're not encouraged to think that way. We are encouraged to think, oh, they're criminals and they need to be put in jail. They need to be put under the jail. And our mentality doesn't, and I guess maybe it's part of the education. We're not taught that we are, as free beings, we can do things as long as we don't disturb the peace, as they say. So
that's true. That is true.
Yeah. So if you would like to join the conversation, family, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone to make a comment or ask a question. If you'd rather just listen to the conversation on your computer and you don't want to listen on your phone, go to www.usnegro, down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. Right now, we don't have any questions, so what I'm going to do is take a musical break, whether you're set, and we'll be right back.
No matter what may come our way,
we are going to make it all through.
We will lift every voice and say,
we are going to make it all through.
Okay, that's quite quickly. Okay, welcome back. This is Dare to Win, the Thursday night radio program of us lifting us, with discuss taking control of the economic destiny of our people and how to do it. Tonight, we're talking to Brother Joseph about tapping into trillions of dollars of disposable income floating around in the black community. Brother Joseph, you were mentioning a program, I think, FANA, is it? Please explain to the family what FANA is and what its mission is.
Yes, I will. Thank you. Ulu, Us Lifting Us set up a real estate work group that was doing research about the potential of our operating in the real estate industry. And that morphed into a new business initiative which was named Fauna Property, LLC. This is a, we have a team of four Ulu members who operate this business for Us Lifting Us, which is the owner of the business. So it's like a division of Ulu. Mm-hmm. And our mission is a formidable one. We want to focus on reversing the continuing decline in Black home ownership in this country. Since 2001, Black home ownership has declined 30% in this country due to some of the things we talked about earlier. We went through a recession in the middle of the 2000s, if you recall. And as that chart indicates, you can see the drastic decline since 2001 in Black wealth in this country. One of the factors in particular that has gotten our attention is Black home ownership. What I mean by that is we've discovered that as our older brothers and sisters transition, too often they leave without a will, or they willed their home to several descendants. And without a will, what happens is the probate court follows guidelines that have been developed by these white people that will award the property to several surviving descendants, sons and daughters, grandsons, granddaughters, et cetera. And so too many of our people are creating wills or that pass their property on to several surviving descendants. And what is the problem with this? Well, those descendants who inherit the property often fail to come together and agree on how to manage the property, and it falls into disrepair, gets behind in the taxes. Eventually, the county has to step in and take possession of this distressed property and auction it off pennies on the dollar. And often it's our adversaries who win the bid, renovate the house, and rent it right back to us. Right. So our goal is to launch a twofold strategy at this problem. First of all, we want to be able to attend those auctions, win the bids for the properties, and fix those properties up and either rent them to our people at affordable rates, or because many of our people have good jobs, as I mentioned earlier, they're professionals, have degrees, got good jobs, but their credit is a little shady, right? So what we can do, what we can do is act as a bank and sell the property to them on a land contract deal, help them get their credit rating boosted back up in 6 months to a year, and then they can go to the bank and buy the home from us, and it's a win-win. We kept the property in our hands instead of the property leaking away into the hands of our adversaries. So that's our strategy. And we can't do this without the help of our Ulu membership. And this goes back to that comment I made earlier about the importance of investment. If we can work this strategy and retain ownership of Black property, provide affordable housing, and or an unconventional approach to home ownership for our Black people, we need to raise capital to execute this strategy. We'll focus initially on finding and selling distressed properties wholesale to Black rehabbers or investors who share our vision, our mission, to retain property in our hands and stop letting it get out into other hands. Of course, as the owner, Us Lifting Us is awarded a percentage of every deal we complete that goes back to the owner, to Us Lifting Us. Why? Well, because Us Lifting Us provided the funds to launch the business. So these wholesale transactions would serve several positive purposes for our team. We'll hone our skills in searching for suitable properties, interview potential sellers, prepare the paperwork, estimate the cost of repairs, and the value of that property after the repairs have been done. In addition, These kinds of deals will allow us to accumulate significant capital to enter the next phase of our strategy, and that is rehabbing these homes ourselves. And once we begin rehabbing homes or renovating these homes, we can then provide them to our people at affordable rates while structuring the agreement as a rent-to-own agreement. And that way the renter who's renting the home from us would take some pride in the house because he or she or the family intends to purchase the home. And another strategy we have is let's offer the rehabbed home for sale outright, but on a land contract arrangement. Some of our people have the funds to buy a home. They have a down payment, but because they have poor credit, they can't go to a bank and qualify for a conventional mortgage. We can provide our people with a workable alternative to own a home, along with a credit repair service and letter of recommendation from us, so eventually they can, within 6 months to a year, they can go to a bank and get a reasonable conventional mortgage. So that's our strategy, but again, and like any business, we have to raise the capital to launch that business.
Right. So I have a question about the six-month rent-to-own type of. So it's like I'm trying to get clarity in my mind. So let's say that I have a job. I have everything I would need to qualify to purchase a home, except my credit score is low. So you will help me in that regard by renting a property that you have to me. And then you would report the timeliness of my rent and everything to whatever the credit rating bureaus are, and by doing that, that would help me to get my credit rating up, and then you would provide. This is all a question. So you would provide documentation, like when I go to the bank, to say that I am a good credit. A good credit risk, I guess. And then by so doing, the bank would be more likely, because we can't guarantee what the bank will do, but the bank might be more likely to give me a regular mortgage, so that then I'm no longer paying to you, I'm paying to the bank. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, no. Although that's possible, because we do have access to credit repair services. Yes, a person, for example, in the scenario you just described, they wanted to rent the home from us with an option to buy, but they have bad credit. So then, what we could do is offer you a credit repair service, and when you get your credit repaired, we would also add a letter of recommendation from us about your consistent rent payments coming in on time, which should be another indicator of whether or not you would be able to pay back a loan from the bank. So that's doable. However, our initial strategy, and although I think that's a good idea, too, to offer that to people who are renting to own, what I was talking about before was a different scenario, but it's the same basic concept, that a person whose credit is in poor shape can have a home to live in, make payments, and at the same time get their credit repaired in 6 months to a year, Gain a letter of recommendation from us because they make payments on time. Mm-hmm. And in that way, they could take that information to a bank and get a conventional mortgage. But we got to understand, Sister Q, and I don't think our brothers and sisters always appreciate this, but there's a lot of resistance to our acquiring any kind of wealth on the part of the people that are in charge, if you will, of the assets. And so we've got to cross every T and dot every I to satisfy people. And personally, I remember buying my first home. I was working for General Motors. I had worked for General Motors for 10 years. And yes, I had rented an apartment and was regular in my payment, had a good credit rating. But when I got ready to buy a house, you would have thought I was trying to buy Princess Anne or something. I mean, I had to jump through all kind of hoops. I'm serious. It was ridiculous. And yet other fellas who I worked right next to who were white were able to buy homes without any problem whatsoever. But when it comes to us, they put us under a microscope. And so I'm not saying that to discourage my people. I'm saying that to help them understand that when I was a kid, I was raised that in order for me to get any kind of recognition, I got to be three times better than that white boy. I got to work three times harder than that white boy. I got to have my act together. I got to cross all the T's, dot every I. So there is nothing they can say. Okay? And so we cannot be slipshod about this. We got to understand that we have artificial hurdles put in our way that we can overcome. But in order to overcome them, we have to be deliberate and very conscious about what we're doing so that we can better our situation for ourselves, for our children, and for our grandchildren. Because right now, there's an effort on the part of these white folks to buy up all kinds of black property. I live in a neighborhood right now where they built three brand new homes in the hood. Uh-huh. And all three of those homes were bought by white people moving into the hood.
Uh-huh.
Yes, ma'am. And that's happening not just here where I live. That's happening everywhere.
Yes,
okay?
For sure.
They can't afford to live out in the suburbs in a $300,000 or $400,000 house. So they're moving in our neighborhoods, building houses that they're selling for $120,000, $130,000, and they're snapping them up. The real estate market right now is red hot. I mean, you can almost name your price for a house today.
We used to talk about that in some of this, you know, some of us grew up with parents that owned their houses in the city. And as the children grew up and, you know, began to make their way, they didn't want to live in the city. So they moved to the suburbs or wherever they did. And when the parents got ready to get rid of the house, if they passed away or if they sold the house, it was usually European extraction who bought it at a cheap price and kept it for a little while. And then they flipped the script and it became fashionable for the children of the people that initially owned the house to now live in the city. So now they have to buy the house, basically their parents' house. They have to buy it from the Europeans that bought it cheap, and they have to pay a lot of money for it.
We
unfortunately, for many of us, don't see the value of what our parents have or what we have in the family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Until the European gets it. then we're willing to have it, you know, where you could have just inherited it from your parents or bought it from your parents. They want it, you know.
Yes.
But we don't, we tend not to think like that. I have another question for you regarding your finances. Do you know of any, or are you considering that there might be the richest man in Babylon who has money available, who would, I don't know if he would be the banker or how he would do that, but instead of going to like Bank of America or any other standard bank, we find someone in the community to be the banker. Is there a any idea like that floating around, or are there legal problems with doing something such as that to keep all the money just whirling around in the community instead of going out to the bankers or to anyone else side of it?
Yes, that's one of the strategies we have, Sister
Okay.
Q. Here's one of the phases of our strategy. We find a property. Let's say a brother or sister is getting older and they don't have any heirs. They want to get rid of the property. They're getting too old to take care of it. And and it needs a lot of work, but they're going to go into assisted living or they're going to go into a nursing home, and they don't have anybody to take over the property, or the heirs don't want anything to do with the property. We want our people to come to us to FANA, which is a division of ULU, and come up with a creative way to solve that problem. In other words, we could buy the house from the elder, rehab the house, and then fix it up, get it landscaped, cut the grass, clean up the trash and stuff like that, get it painted up and fixed up, brought up to code, and then find one of our people who want to buy a home but have bad credit.
Okay.
Right? They can buy the property from FANA, and we would sell it to them on a land contract deal. And that way we become the banker. The money stays in the black community. The property stays in the black community. We assist this family to get their credit rating boosted up to the point where they can now go to the bank and get a loan from the bank, pay us off, and they're now homeowners paying their mortgage payments to the bank like everybody else. That was the reason.
Okay.
That's the reason for what's called a land contract arrangement.
Okay.
So they're buying the home from us, and it's a win-win. It's a win-win for the elder person who's moving into a nursing home and doesn't want the house to just wind up being repossessed by the county. It's turned into a nice house, sold to a nice family that wants to own a home, but maybe they don't have good credit. But they got a down payment. They can make a down payment. They can make mortgage payments to us. We help them rebuild their credit. They get their credit up to snuff. They go to the bank. They get a bank loan, pay us off, and they're paying back the bank.
Good.
So
if we can solve
the elder has his problem solved. The young family that needs a home, wants a home, but has poor credit, solved their problem, got their credit boosted, and they were able then to go to the bank and get a mortgage through a conventional mortgage arrangement.
Right.
So all of these strategies are aimed at to stop this decline in home ownership as much as we can, and to see what we can do. To do that, we've got to come up with ways to actually sit down with folks. For example, there may be people on the call listening right now who are in a situation where their home may be on the verge of being foreclosed. We want those brothers and sisters to come to us before the house goes into foreclosure. We know ways to prevent the house to going into foreclosure. We've got situations where we have grandparents who are getting older and they're getting ready to go into a nursing home. And I don't want to take care of that house. I'm not interested in that house. But it would be nice if I could get that house into the hands of our people who could then fix it up and sell it to somebody, a young couple or young family that's trying to own a home but needs some help to do so. And then these are some of the things that we can do to help one another and at the same time reduce this decline in black home ownership in this country. But in order to do it, we're going to have to work together. And that's why I think what ULU is doing here with breaking off this division called FAUNA Properties to help us address this decline in home ownership in the black community. And at the same time, try to find ways to provide affordable housing to our people because these homes are being snapped up by people, and like many brothers and sisters right here in my community are being called almost every day. Someone is calling them, asking them if they want to sell their home, or they're getting a letter offering to buy their home. Okay, this is all across the country.
Right.
And if our people get into a tight situation where they are considering selling their home, what we want our people to start thinking about is, why don't I do business with my own people first?
Absolutely. Yeah. Brother,
so that's our hope.
We have a caller on the line, so I'm going to open the line for the caller.
Okay.
Caller with the last 4-3-4-4-0, please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Greetings, Sister Q, and greetings to you, Brother Yosef. This is Brother Shabaka. I'm calling from the Miami, Florida area. I wish you well, and the program has been extremely informative and enlightening. Let me pose my question, and then I'll just hang up and listen to your response. You said that you noticed certain properties, arrangements, and transactions in your area. Your area is just where FAUNA is starting, or is there a plan to expand? And just curious, what does FAUNA mean? It sounds like an African name, but let me hang up and listen to your response and keep the good work up. You made a lot of sense with what we can do and what apparently we're not doing right now. Peace.
Peace. Thank you, Brother Shabaka.
Brother Shabaka, I live in Spartanburg, South Carolina, which is about 20 minutes north of Greenville, South Carolina. Both of these communities are growing like leaps and bounds. Greenville is the home of BMW. There's also a couple of tire companies, Westinghouse. There are many manufacturing concerns in the Greenville area, and it has grown to the point where that they're building warehouses and factories around Spartanburg as well. And as a result, what's happening in the black community is vacant lots are being snapped up. And these white folks are building brand new homes, stick built from the ground up in the black community and selling these homes to white people. Okay? Because again, most of our people, because of credit issues, are unable to go to a bank and get a conventional loan. So that's one of the issues that we're trying to to address is the land contract arrangement. I'm sorry, Sister Q, you had a question?
No, I'm going to ask my question after you finish.
Okay. And the acronym FANA, F-A-N-A, actually is a African acronym, if you will. And it basically is supposed to, we did some digging on what that meant, the sister, one of the sisters in the group of our team came up with it and did some research on where it came from. And FANA is an African term, and it means one who provides light, honor, and wealth. And so we've adopted that as the acronym for our endeavor, FANA Properties, because we want to provide light, education, information, direction, consultation, and honor. We want to deal with our people honorably and to be fair with them. Why? So that all of us can retain the basic fundamental wealth that begins in this country, and that's owning property, homes,
right.
Land, vacant lots, farmland.
Uh-huh.
So that's the focus of our endeavor. I hope that answers the brother's question.
Yes. Well, he said he would listen online. I'm listening on the phone. So, but I think that you gave a thorough reply.
Okay, Sister Q, now you had a question.
Yes. Let's say I'm a family member who just, you know, is on the call and I've listened to everything you said this evening, and it makes a lot of sense to me, right? Howsomever, I don't have a lot of money to invest. How can I become a part of the plan that you're talking about? Or how
yeah.
to finance it? You know, how does that
yeah. Well, although we have over 600 ULU members on the rolls, we don't find many of them who are willing to stick their necks out to help our people. What we want to do is appeal to the ULU membership at large to start thinking seriously about investing in ULU. And you can do so by making small monthly investments in ULU. One unit or share costs $1,000, but it can be paid for over time by making small monthly investments of as little as $25 a month. And in 40 months, you've paid for one unit in ULU. Mm-hmm. Imagine, if you will, what could happen if just half of the members on the roll, say just 300 of our brothers and sisters decided, hey, I'm going to invest $25 a month in ULU, so that they can start generating businesses to hire and train our people instead of us always having to go to white folks with our hands out begging for work. If just 300 of our brothers and sisters who are members of ULU invested $25 a month, that would amount to $7,500 every month coming into ULU. Now, those funds could be used to fund business opportunities we currently have already in the pipeline that would employ and benefit black people. But due to a lack of funding, these business opportunities cannot be launched. You can't run a business without some startup money. So everything ULU is doing is aimed at benefiting our people. We're the most distressed people on the planet, and all we have is each other. But we cannot accomplish much alone. But, brother, if we ever come together, there's nothing we cannot accomplish.
Thank you for sharing that. And that's, I think, one of the reasons so much time and energy is spent keeping us from coming together and making it difficult for each of us to have something to help someone else. It's almost time for us to wind up this evening's program, Brother Yosef. what would you like
to Wow, that was a fast hour, wasn't it?
Yeah, right? Very interesting conversation, so that helped time go fast. As we wind up, what would you like to make sure that the family takes with them from this evening's discussion?
Well, what we have to do in order for us to build sustainable wealth in the Black community is we have got to come together. We've got to learn how to work together, because alone we're not going to accomplish much. And we've had 400 years of being divided, separated, and distrusted. And we see the result. I think it's time for us to start thinking about coming together, trusting some people with some integrity, and
mm-hmm.
build something that we may not personally benefit from, but maybe our children and our grandchildren can benefit from. In other words, we got to plant some seeds now to grow some trees years down the road that won't provide shade for us, but it'll provide
right.
shade for our grandchildren. I think we got to start thinking generationally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, we have another caller, so we're going to take this caller right quick, and then we're going to have to get off the line.
Okay.
Caller with the last four digits, 9961. Please state your name, where you're calling from, ask your question, or make your comment.
Greetings, Sister Q and Brother Yosef. This is Sister Kira.
Peace to see you, Kira.
Yes, and I want to thank you both for the conversation this evening, and really appreciate Brother Yosef talking about the importance of land, home ownership.
Right.
The thing that I wanted to comment about is that if we don't, we see all the time, and Brother Yosef alluded to how white people going into our communities and buying up land and houses and renovating them. And, you know, our communities are being regentrified, and we're losing our land. And I just want to encourage the listening audience that we can be complicit in allowing that to happen by just standing back and letting it happen. So
yes,
I'm
absolutely.
Challenging our community to step up and do something to prevent that from happening, and they can step up by, as Brother Yosef mentioned, contributing to Ulu either through a monthly subscription plan or just straight up, you know, acquiring a unit within Ulu so that we can, as a collective group, start protecting the land in homes in our community so it doesn't fall, so that we can prevent the great land transfer again or the land grab.
Right.
I mean, they did that throughout all of Africa. And if we don't do something, then we're just, you know, we're standing back and letting it happen. And so I just
want to
thank Brother Yosef for mentioning that about joining us as a cooperative. We together are much stronger than we are separately. And so if our membership or those who are not members who want to join and be a part of this so that we can, you know, we can gentrify our own communities. We don't need to let these other people come in our communities and take over the land and make it, you know, and price out the elders in the community who own their homes, have owned their homes for generations. And we need to help ensure, support, protect generational wealth. We need to step up. Just to sit back and watch other people doing it, if we're complicit to making it happen. So all I'm going. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you very much for that. Okay, so Brother Yosef, this is our hour. I want to thank you for sharing information with us. I hope that the information you've provided will encourage people to go to usliftingus.com and find out everything that they need to do in order to become a member so we can actually solve our own problems.
Amen.
That's important for us. And I want to thank everyone who joined us on the call this evening. We will be back next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Peace, my sister. Shalom.
A change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turn up the collar on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street. Not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them eat? A son of disregard, a broken bottle top, and a one-man show. They follow each other on the wind, you know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one yet to know.
It's gonna feel real good. Some more
change.